So we'll talk about it. Anybody else? Bible verse. All right, Bob, if you'll come on up, and there's some good Lindors in here, and also, if you dig, I think there's a Butterfinger, but anyhow, yeah. All right, let's get started. Page 21, Lesson 5, Chasing Fleas. What a strange topic, and what a strange verse that is, the one that she just quoted, the verse at the top of our page. After whom is the king of Israel come out? After whom dost thou pursue? After a dead dog? After a flea? And so what is that all about? Well, let's look at it today. And we'll start in our book, On the Run from Saul. So this is right after the end of chapter 23, when they ended up in the holds of En-Gedi, and they were just about to be captured. And then all of a sudden a messenger came. And just like in the movies, you know, all of a sudden, just at the last moment, they were spared from being caught. So then, chapter 24, and it came to pass, when Saul was returned from following the Philistines, that it was told him, saying, Behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi. So here we go again. All right? And we'll read down, I think we'll read down to verse 14, 15, and then we'll read in our book. Then Saul took, verse 2, then Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of all Israel and went to seek David and his men upon the rocks of the wild goats. And he came to the sheepcotes by the way, where was a cave. And Saul went in to cover his feet, and David and his men remained in the sides of the cave. And the men of David said unto him, Behold, the day of which the Lord said unto thee, Behold, I will deliver thine enemy into thine hand, that thou mayest do to him as it shall seem good unto thee. Then David arose and cut off the skirt of Saul's robe privily. So here they are. They're hiding in a cave. And this is just like in the movies. As a matter of fact, the movies are the ones that plagiarized the Bible. The Bible wrote this before the movies did. But here they are in a cave, and just as it would just be, circumstances would have it, they hear some rustling outside. Shh. And then all of a sudden they hear voices. Oh. And then in walks Saul, the guy himself. I mean, the bad guy himself. Dun, 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 or whatever that music is. Dun, 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 whatever it is. But anyway, here he comes in, you know, and oh my goodness, it's him, you know. And here's your chance. Obviously, God has delivered this man in your hands. I mean, obviously. Look. It's obvious. Verse 5, And it came to pass afterward that David's heart smote him, because he had cut off Saul's skirt. And he said unto his men, The Lord forbid that I should do this thing unto my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch forth mine hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord. So David stayed his servants with these words, and suffered them not to rise against Saul. But Saul rose up out of the cave and went on his way. David also arose afterward and went out of the cave and cried after Saul, saying, My Lord the king! And when Saul looked behind him, David stooped with his face to the earth and bowed himself. And David said to Saul, Wherefore hearest thou men's words, saying, Behold, David seeketh thy hurt. Behold, this day thine eyes have seen how that the Lord hath delivered thee unto mine hand in the cave, and some bade me kill thee. But mine eye spared thee. And I said, I will not put forth mine hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed. Moreover, my father, see the skirt of thy robe in my hand, for in that I cut off the skirt of thy robe and killed thee not. Know thou and see that there is neither evil nor transgression in mine hand, and I have not sinned against thee, yet thou huntest my soul to take it. The Lord judge between me and thee, and the Lord avenge me of thee, but mine hand shall not be upon thee. As saith the proverb of the ancient, Wickedness proceedeth from the wicked, but mine hand shall not be upon thee. After whom is the king of Israel come out? After whom dost thou pursue? After a dead dog? After a flea? The Lord, therefore, be judge, and judge between me and thee, and see and plead my cause, and deliver me out of thine hand. Wow, another interesting story. Let's read in our book. On the run from Saul, David and his men had sought refuge inside a cave. They knew that the army of Saul was drawing very close to them. To their surprise, the army stopped right outside their cave. Saul himself went inside. In the cool of the cave, he positioned himself on the ground and took a nap. It's just almost comical, really. It's just funny. David's men whispered to David, "Kill him! There he is! This is obvious. God's wanting you to do this." They wanted to kill Saul. They wanted him dead. They were sick and tired of running, I'm sure. They were exhausted. They were tired of being chased by the guy that they were supposed to be protected from, of and protected from and protected for. They were supposed to be loyal to him, but he was trying to kill them. He was against them for no good reason. And they wanted him dead. Man, this is our chance. However, as we read the story in the Bible, we find that Saul walked out of the cave unharmed. After Saul and his army were some distance away, then David called out. And he says in verse 14, "After whom is the king of Israel come out? After whom dost thou pursue? After a dead dog? After a flea?" This was a strange verse to have for our theme verse, but I think we can explain it here today. He also says, verse 12, "The Lord judge between me and thee, and the Lord avenge me of thee, but mine hand shall not be upon thee. The Lord will be my judge. And if the Lord wants you dead, he'll take care of it. But I'm not going to take your life." Verse 15, "The Lord therefore be judge, and judge between me and thee, and see, and plead my cause, and deliver me out of thine hand. It is not for me to take your life. You're anointed of God to be the king, and I'm not going to kill the king that God anointed." But what does this mean, after a flea, chasing fleas? All right, the last paragraph on the bottom of page 21 says, "Let us think on the subject of chasing fleas." Anybody here ever chase fleas? Not on purpose. I mean, rarely we even see them. You know, there are no see-ems, right? We rarely even see them, let alone chase after them. Why? It's kind of a waste of time, don't you think? Isn't it a waste of time to chase fleas? In other words, if you get what you're pursuing, what really will you have? In the eyes of God, it may amount to nothing more than a flea. You know what? I'm not ready to turn the page yet. You know what? The world is chasing fleas. The world is filled with flea chasers. Because when they get what they have, what will they have? I mean, these guys who figured out how to leave one football team and go to another football team so that they could make and build their own team and then win a Super Bowl and go, yay! For what? The old days of sports, what was fun was when the underdog finally won. But it's not fun to watch a bunch of professionals determined to get together and build a team. And besides all that, who won the Super Bowl 13 years ago? But at the time, it was the biggest deal in the world. But nobody can tell me right now who won it 13 years ago. You know why? Because it's chasing fleas. Oh, no, Pastor, there's lots of money involved. Chasing fleas. How much money do they take when they die? Hank Aaron died a month ago. How much money did he take with him? A lot of people chase fleas. Can you imagine working your whole life for the Republican Party in 2019, 2020? What do you got? What do you got for that? There's just a lot of flea chasers. And that's what David's saying. He's saying, what are you doing? You think this is so important, but you're really just chasing a dead dog. You're chasing a flea, okay? I mean, this is not going to matter to anything. That's why this is the theme verse today, because chasing fleas is what we get suckered into doing. What are you pursuing? The box says, the pursuit of our lives tells the story of our life's purpose. What will you have when you finally get your flea? What will it do for you? If you get me, Saul, will it make your family happy again? Oh, his family's a miserable mess. If you get me, will it make all your kingdom happy? What will you get out of chasing? Why are you chasing a flea? Why are you wasting your time? In the eyes of God, it may amount to nothing more than a flea, what we chase after. What a waste of our precious time. And there's just so much. And so the devil, if you're saved, he's lost you to hell. He can't take you to hell. But what he can do is try to get you busy with something that absolutely just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Chasing fleas doesn't matter. It's a silly thing to do. And that's the point of this title today, is, what are you doing? What a waste of time. Now, besides Saul and his chasing of something that doesn't matter, when I was Gunner's age and even younger, I had my grandpa ask me, what do you want for your Christmas or birthday or whatever? And back then, there was a Sports Illustrated magazine, and they had in the back of this magazine, they had these posters, you know, great big, you know, like 2.5 by 4 foot size posters of athletes. And, and they had Roger Staubach, and they had Michael Jordan, and they had Walter Payton, and they had these really, you know, guys back in the 70s and 80s that were, you know, pretty impressive. So I just said, well, I'd like some of these posters. Well, then my greed took over. I couldn't stop checking off the list. And I just kept checking posters. And I don't know, I must have checked off $150 worth of posters, which back then was a lot of money. I had so many posters, I barely could fit them all on my bedroom walls. I just had plastered. You know what? I think those posters are rolled up inside of a tube in our shed. But I haven't seen them for at least 25 years. And honestly, I was really ashamed of myself for even asking for those. Because my grandpa didn't claim to be a Christian. And I just, you know, I mean, honestly, a lot of the guys I had on my wall, it's like, I'm not even sure they were good heroes for a Christian kid to have on their wall. And yet it was silly. It was, my cousins were involved in baseball cards, so I had football cards for a while. And just things like that. But you know what? I figured out that a lot of that's just, I'm just chasing fleas. It's just a silly thing. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't matter to anyone. It's just silly, but we all do it. We get so wrapped up. Remember the Cabbage Patch dolls? Man, what a beautiful, wonderful thing to own. Or the Beanie Babies. You know? Or whatever it might be. I'm just saying, we chase after stuff and we think it's important. I didn't think about this until several years ago. Someone said, boy, you sure do have a lot of storage units in Custer. And I started noticing, you're right, we do have a lot of storage units in Custer. My goodness. And they said, the person that talked to me, they were a visiting preacher, he said, you know, there's a lot of money in storage. He said, you think about it. He said, it costs you just one-time fee to pour that slab and build that building. And a lot of times you don't even have to put electricity to it. And then people pay you every month to store their junk. I'm like, whoa, why didn't I think of that? You know? And now I can't help but notice the storage units in our area. And a lot of times, it's stuff that people will never get to. They'll never use. They'll never even see it again. But they're paying somebody to hold it for them. And then, after a while, they have a flea market. And they sell all their fleas that they chased after. I want to get to heaven and look down after life is over and the final date is on my tombstone and look down and see things that were worth chasing, you know? And to see things around me in heaven that were worth pursuing and got saved as a result of the chasing. But to chase after fleas and to be so selfish and so self-focused and so naive and so short-sighted is sad. But let's look at the other side of the story, and that is David. Because, boy, was David an example here in this story. In verse or page 22, David spared the king. In the verse 6 verses, we read that, but it says that when David and his men were hiding in the cave, that Saul went in verse 3 and covered his feet. And then verse 4, the men of David said unto him, behold, the day of which the Lord said unto thee, behold, I will deliver thine enemy into thine hand, that thou mayest do him as it shall seem good unto thee. Now, I'm not sure God actually told David he was going to kill Saul, but they made it sound like he did. And then David arose. You know, I think at first David got up like, yeah, I mean, this is a no-brainer. But something in David, instead of plunging the sword into his heart, you know, he just reached down while Saul was snoring and he cut off the hem of his garment there. And he says in verse 6, I will not, I should not forbid me, God forbid, that I should do this thing unto my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch forth mine hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord. And so I will not lay my hand on what belongs to God. The Lord is in charge. The king belongs to God. He is the Lord's anointed. He belongs to the same God that I serve. And I'm going to let God deal with him, not me. The box says the things that belong to God need to be left in God's hands. Boy, what a temptation to take it into your own hands. You know, we can convince ourselves that God wants us to take it into our own hands. I think that's what happened with Moses at age 40. Well, I can see what God's doing. He wants me. And so he kills this Egyptian. He was taking what God was doing in Moses' life, but he was taking it into his own hands. And here we see this happening again with David. And he's recognizing that this is God's business, not mine. How are we to treat our enemies? That's why that one memory verse, Matthew 5, was quoted earlier, and we'll read that in a minute. David could have put an end to Saul and no longer have had to live in fear. He would not have to worry anymore about what Saul was going to do about him or what he was saying about him. However, David left the matter in God's hands. Matthew chapter 5. You know, there's people out there that talk, and if you're human, you've probably had the horrible thought of, I sure wish so-and-so was dead. But Matthew chapter 5 and verse 38, it says, ye have heard that it hath been said, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if any man will sue thee at the law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. Give to him that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow thee, turn not thou away. I think this is dealing with people who are supposed to be on the same side. They're supposed to be Christians. They're supposed to be a part of your church family. That would be the case of King Saul and David. They were on the same. This wasn't Philistine. This wasn't a Philistine that David was dealing with. This was one of his own. And verse 43, ye have heard that it hath been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. Wow. Well, that's easier said than done. To love your enemies and to pray for them and to desire that God help them and bless them. And wow, verse 45, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. This is the proof of that. For he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and on the unjust. For if ye love them which love you, which is what we humanly do all the time, what reward have you? Do not even the publicans the same? I mean, the most wicked person in the world loves the person that loves them. And if you salute your brethren only, what do you more than others? Do not even the publicans so? Be therefore perfect, complete, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. You can't do that naturally. That's only supernatural. Only if you're saved can you do what Jesus just said there. And it teaches that we are to pray for our enemies. It doesn't say we have to necessarily like what they do. David didn't like what Saul was doing, but he still was respectful and honoring to God. We're to trust God with those who are against us. When we take matters into our own hands, we demonstrate how little faith we have in the Lord. I mean, think about it. Is God still God? Can he handle it? Yes, he can. Will he in his time? Yes, he will. We are wrong when we take it into our own hands, and yet it happens a lot. And David spared the king. It's not my business. This is God's business. Whew. This is crucial. I mean, this is hard. This is painful to even think about, but this is right. And so David spared the king because of God. David did not do what he could have done. I think of Joseph. Joseph was all of a sudden, things were flip-flopped, and now Joseph is over all the land of Egypt. He's only Pharaoh's higher than Joseph. And in comes his 10 brothers that sold him as a slave. And Joseph said, I can see what God's doing behind the scenes. and so I'm not going to kill you. They thought he was going to kill him. They thought the only reason why he didn't kill him is because his dad was still alive, and then as soon as dad died at the end of Genesis, they thought for sure, okay, now he's going to kill us. And Joseph said, don't you understand? You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. And God allowed the evil for the good. And so I understand what God's doing. He feared God more than the emotions he might have had with his brothers at one time. And by the way, when you get right with God, it'll help you get to feel better and to think better about people. David spared the king. Wow. I don't know. I kind of think that there was a point where David actually pitied the king. I mean, by now, David knows that his own son, Jonathan, respects him more than he respects the dead. And there comes a point where the evil one that has hurt you, and we've all had somebody who has hurt us, you realize, you come to the point where you say, I pity that person. I feel sorry for them. Matthew Henry was robbed, and he said, there's four things about this that I want to give thanks for. Number one, it's the first time I've ever been robbed. Number two, they took my money, but it wasn't much. Number three, they took my money, but it wasn't my life. And number four, it was I who was robbed, and not I who did the robbing. You feel sorry for people because of the fact that they're guilty? I feel sorry for people for having to live with that, to having to live with how they are, and to not be able to sleep well at night, and to enjoy themselves and be pleased with themselves. You have to feel sorry for them. David spared the king, I think, because he realized that he was stronger than the king. He was in a better position than the king. He was on the run, and it was getting lousy, and it was pretty tiring. But David was happier than the king, and he spared the king. But notice this, and I think this is huge. David's going to be king. And look what he taught his men. You'll notice this about David. David demonstrated, even when Saul was finally killed, David killed the guy that killed Saul. Because David made it very clear that you do not be disloyal. You do not be disloyal to the man that God has set up and anointed. David stayed his men, it says in verse 7, back there in our passage, 1 Samuel 24, verse 7. So David stayed, or cut off, or stopped, stood still as his servants with these words, and suffered them not to rise against Saul. But Saul rose up out of the cave and went on his way. These guys were ruffians. I mean, they were the outcasts, and they were some, we're talking about some hardcore guys here. These guys had some background to them. And David put a stop to it and froze them in their tracks with what he said. I will not do this. And he stayed his men. How did he do that? It was David's men who tried to persuade him to take the king's life. David had the opportunity to prove to his followers that his faith was in God. The Lord provides for us the wonderful opportunity to prove to our closest associates that we are trusting God. Mom and Dad, there are times where you can prove to your children that your emotions aren't getting the best of you and that you're going to trust God. That you're not going to take matters into your own hands, you're going to trust God. I have a book of illustrations, and in there somewhere is the story of a pastor whose boys found a dog. And it was a nice dog. And this dog was, I think, all black, except for in the tail there were these three strands of white. There's three streaks of white. And they really got fond of the dog and got to know the dog. And then, I don't know, several days later, somebody knocked on the door and said, hey, I'm looking for a dog. Someone said, you might have my dog. And the man described the dog. And, of course, he described the three white hairs in this tail. Pastor went in the back with the boys and pulled out those three white hairs. That pastor taught his boys a terrible lesson that day. And unfortunately, parents talk too much in front of their kids, for one thing. It's one thing to talk with your spouse about issues, but when you let your kids listen to it, and I know, I've seen it, and I know it happens. Here's what happens is, you and your spouse get it all figured out, but you talked about it, and the kids haven't got over it yet. And they're still walking around all boiled up about it. What a terrible mistake. Terrible mistake. You wonder why the kids don't have a good relationship with others? They heard you talk about them. And if you want your child to respect people, don't talk bad about people to your child. I can understand if you want to talk to your spouse about it. That's different. That's you and you're one flesh, and you're talking to each other, and you're trying to get, and hopefully you're going to pray about it and get it under control. But when you talk to others, or when you talk in front of others, that's gossip for one thing, and you're damaging what they think. Years ago, my neighbor, Susan, one of her sons got in trouble on the school bus. Blanche was the driver over in Newcastle, and Blanche yelled at one of the boys and really got after him, and I think even maybe punished him in some way. And then later on, Blanche called Susan and said, Susan was a single mom, I think, at the time. Susan, I got to investigating that situation and thinking it through. I think I got after the wrong kid. I don't think it was your son. And Susan said, oh, don't worry about it. He probably deserved it a different time anyway. That's a parent that you can appreciate, because what Susan did is she said, I already told him you need to respect Blanche. She's the driver. And I'm not going to now tell him not to respect you or that you were wrong. Just let it go. You know, and it's okay. It's all right. And Blanche doesn't have to. And I told him he probably deserved it from some other thing. You know, today we have the opposite. It's like adults are teaching the kids not to respect and not to be respectful. All right? The position is to be respected even when the personality is not very respectable. And that's still true. I walked into a store one time as a teenager and it said, rule number one, authority is always right. Rule number two, if authority is wrong, see rule number one. I mean, there's respect for position. And David was respecting the position. He was understanding that this was something that God... Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Why? Because who gave you your parents? Well, my parents aren't perfect. Well, who are you really complaining about? The person who gave them to you. Uh-oh. Now, I understand parents can be lousy, but God must have had you go through that for a reason. And we have to respect authority even if we know there's something not right here. And we have to learn what God would have us to learn. And the greatest example in the Bible is someone who had a stepfather, and yet he obeyed him. In fact, the Bible says he learned how to obey. His name was Jesus. And he had a stepfather named Joseph. Anybody here think Jesus ever talked back to Joseph? Anybody ever? Can you imagine what it must have been like to be Jesus, living with Joseph and Mary? And I just sillily, you know, can you imagine Joseph looking outside saying, oh, looks like it's going to rain today. And Jesus, the creator of the universe, is like, it's not going to rain. Oh, a stupid idiot. Because he would have known if it was going to rain. But he didn't do that. He let Joseph and Mary be the human parents they had to be. And, you know, first of all, what I know is that even when people think they know a problem with a leadership, themselves are not able to do it all themselves anyway. If they had the steering wheel, they wouldn't be able to do it as good as they think they could do it. And we all know that's true. But here, David was teaching his men something. This is huge. This is going to help David years down the line in their loyalness and faithfulness to him, because they realized that he put God above anybody. So page 23, it's a part of our old sinful nature to want to get even with people. It just is. I mean, we love hearing about somebody that we don't like having a problem. However, David stayed his servants. He said no. These men were weary. You got to understand, these guys were tired of running. They thought that in a moment it could all be done. We'll just kill this guy and we'll be done with this. But David proved something to them about respect for authority. David proved something to them about this matter of trying to gratify oneself immediately. We're the generation that has to have it right now. We cannot wait until later. You think about it. you know, we got computer problems, and when the computer goes wrong, it gets us frustrated. But we're really pretty spoiled. I mean, think about it. We push this button, and if those doors don't open up in the next 3 seconds, we're like, what's wrong? Are you kidding? 100 years ago, they didn't have that. Well, you push a button, and you wait a few minutes, and finally the doors open. You step in, and you're back up to the 15th floor. But we're all upset because it's on the 9th floor, and we got to wait another 20 seconds. We're just that way. And we just, our flesh wants self-gratification, and we want it now. David's demonstrated his genuine faith in God, and he wasn't going to take matters into his own hands, and he wasn't going to gratify himself, and he wasn't going to get even. David taught his men that he could be trusted. I mean, you think about it. You can trust that guy. That guy won't even kill his enemies. His number one enemy, when he has the chance, he's letting God take care of it. You can trust that guy. So what do we teach our family? What do we teach our neighbors? Selfishness or honor? Our closest family members, the box says, the closest family members are responding in the way we respond to God. They're seeing how we respond, and they respond accordingly. Being in a pastor's home, my kids know probably some things just by knowing, all right? And my wife and I have done our best to never talk negative about the people in our church. Never. But to encourage our kids to be encouraging. And we do our best to do that. But there are times when there's just an obvious negativity going on. I don't know why, but for some reason that just popped in my head this morning. Years ago, my wife called someone on a Saturday and said, "Hey, we would like to have you over for lunch tomorrow." Okay, that sounds good. And so then she goes through her thing, homemade bread, homemade this, all this stuff, you know, putting it all together. And then the husband said okay. But the wife, she heard about it and said, "No way." So that morning they came to church and said, "My wife doesn't want to go to your house for lunch." But Miss Wilma, she just, you know, and I don't know that our kids ever heard that story. We figured out somebody else to have over at the last minute. But that was just kind of like kick you right in the ribs, you know. That stuff happens. But Miss Wilma has the ability, not her own ability, but through Christ, to still be kind and gracious to that individual. And I'll be honest, it was probably after I heard about it, it was probably harder for me to get over it than for her. But those things happen. And what we do then proves selfishness or honor to God. David spared the king. David stayed his men. And David spoke with Saul. Good grief. Not only did he do what he did, cut off his skirt and then feel bad about it and then let Saul walk out of the cave, but then he goes out after him and says, "Hey, I just want you to know." I mean, I think at that point I'd have been like, "Just let him leave. You know, just let him go. I mean, what can I say that can make this any better?" And can you imagine his men all watching him walk? "Oh, you know, what are you doing? Now you're letting them all know we're in here." And so in verse 8, David also arose afterward and went out of the cave and cried after Saul, saying, "My Lord the King." He's still calling him Lord. "Hey, Solly Wally." It's not what he said. "My Lord the King." Honoring. "And when Saul looked behind him, David stooped with his face to the earth and bowed himself." That took courage. Now, you know, David obviously had to have been right with God, because that's how you get courage. This kind of courage doesn't come naturally. And so David had courage and took the risk and stepped out of the place of safety and hiding and started talking to Saul. Bible says in Proverbs 15, verse 1, "A soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger." How many times have we made a bad matter worse by the way we approach someone? Many times, right things have been said in the wrong way. Oh boy, isn't that the truth? Guilty. We're right, but we're so angry about it, we can't say it in the right way. A soft answer turns away wrath. Here David humbled himself, called him Lord, the King, my Lord the King, and spoke the truth. He said true things to him, but he said it in a humble way. He bowed himself to him. And he could be right with Saul because he was already right with God. And you can't be right with God when you have evil in your heart towards somebody else. And he said in verse 12, "The Lord judge between me and thee, and the Lord avenge me of thee." God is going to be your judge. God's going to one that's going to be the avenger. I'm not going to do it. See this robe I have, this piece of this robe I have in my hand? That was what I just cut off of you. I could have easily killed you, but my heart said it was wrong. I knew in my heart this was wrong. I shouldn't do this. And I know that God's the one that has to take care of you, not me. And it softened Saul's heart. It softened his heart, and he was humbled when he saw what David had done. And he asked David not to kill his family. I think Saul knew this guy David's going to be the king. He said it. I can tell God's going to make you king someday. Bible says in Proverbs 16:7, this is a good verse to remember, Proverbs 16:7, "When a man's ways please the Lord, he maketh his enemies to be at peace with him." When people are angry with you, the best route is to be humble about it. When people are so upset and they're pursuing you, the best route to take is to let them know that you're not near as upset about it as they are, and that you're humble before them. Boy, there's times I failed that. There's one time, though, I think I might have passed it a few times. There was one time I was driving my school bus, and all of a sudden I heard this, and I looked down, and there was a teenage girl from the high school. This was years ago. And she's just, you know, waving at me or whatever. And I guess I must have started to turn, and I didn't see her, I guess. And didn't see her down there in the blind spot. So anyway, I slowed down or whatever. She sped ahead, and I veered over, went into the gas station, and she pulled into the gas station, came over, and started to give me what for, you know? And I just said, "Man, I'm sorry I didn't see you. I'm sorry. You're right. I'm glad nothing happened. We didn't connect." And instantly, she just, boom, her face just changed, and she just went from angry to, "Oh, all right, well, just want to let you know." That's one of the few times where I passed with flying colors. Other ways, I've flunked with flying colors too. But when a man's ways please the Lord, when a soft answer turns away wrath, there's great more to be gained with that humble spirit, that humble attitude, and to just be honest and humble about yourself, and that you're trusting in God, if you're really trusting in God. And so the box here says, because David had a submissive, humble spirit, God gave him authority. God gave him authority because he was humble. Humble yourself in the sight of the Lord, and he'll lift you up. But Saul had a rebellious spirit, and God took away his authority. I mean, look at the difference. God had to take Saul's authority away, but David was given more authority because of his humble spirit. We need to recognize in our lives the failures, and whether or not we're acting more like Saul or David. And are we chasing fleas? And what does it matter if you finally win this argument? What will you have? This really has nothing to do with anything, but there's people out there who argue about the earth being flat. Did you know that? There are people who argue about it. I mean, they think that it's a mandate from heaven to prove that the earth is flat. And I always ask them, look, even if you are right, what's it going to do for me? How will it make me a better human being, and how will I be a happier person once we figure out the earth is flat, as you say this? I don't understand. To me, it's chasing fleas. And there are people who argue about stuff that's just, it's just fleas. It's not going to matter, so just let it go. I have opinions, and I believe the Bible teaches certain things, but it's not the number one major issue in my life. But boy, you'll find out other people it is. Wow! Ah! And why are you still pursuing this? What will you get when you finally get what it is you think you're pursuing that you have to have? What will you gain by it? And David asked that amazing question, "What are you doing, Saul? Why are you chasing me? I'm just a flea. What are you doing? What are you doing?" Let's not chase fleas with our life. Let's chase things that are really valuable. Lord, we thank you for the Bible. We thank you for what it teaches. Help us to see ourselves in these two men, to repent of the things that we are very fleshly and selfish about, to desire to be humble and to be right with you and to be honorable and honoring you and a blessing to others. Teach us and show us our failures. Help us to be what you'd have us to be. Help parents to be wise in what they teach their children, not just with their mouth, but with their actions. Help us to be wise in our dealings with others. We ask in Jesus' name. Amen.